This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 156 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And yay, Max, it's Thursday, which means the Democrats are finally getting the hell out of my town.
You'll have a little bit of peace and quiet coming up, I hope.
It's been a long week of traffic jams and protesters, and so it's I'm looking forward to a great show tonight because we'll be talking about something other than what I keep hearing on the news all day long. So let's talk about topics. Hard to believe, but part 107 is only 30 days away as we record this.
Right.
When cows fly, mind-controlled swarms, Flirty delivers Slurpees, another arrest for your grounded files, and a drone's doing good about landmines. So why don't we get started, and I'll let you lead off with 30 days to part 107.
The small UAS rule, also known as part 107, will be effective on August 29th, 2016. And that's going to include all of the pilot rules, the operating rules, and so forth that we've talked about. We'll have some links in the show notes. There's some information from the FAA. There's a PDF that provides a summary of the small UAS rule. There's a small UAS advisory circular, which describes how to use the rule. And then there's also a link to the complete text of the small UAS rule. So depending on if you want to just look at a summary or if you'd like to study the rule in detail, we'll have it all there. Now, I think, David, wouldn't you say that most of the responses from a variety of stakeholders in this whole new industry have been pretty positive about Part 107, wouldn't you say?
I don't think I've heard much complaint at all. Now that you mentioned it, it's sort of come in with some fanfare and just sort of everyone's accepted it and moving on. Now, if somebody disagrees with us, send us some feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. But I think the FAA got it right. I mean, we did say that this is incremental and this is step one, but considering all of the angst we had about the notice of proposed rulemaking, this is, I think, went fairly smoothly. So,
yeah, I would agree. I think the FAA did a good job. We have an interesting article in Ag Week titled "New UAV Rules Should Help Farmers and the Ag Business." Now, as we've said many, many times, we think about drones and aerial videography frequently, things like that. We think about package delivery. But I think one of the major applications out there is agriculture, precision ag, and all of that. So this is an article from an industry publication, and they confirm, too, that most people seem to like Part 107. And within the agriculture business, generally favorable reviews as well. The article mentions that North Dakota State University specialist in the Agricultural Machine Systems Group says that the rules are positive for agriculture. We have the president of the Minnesota Independent Crop Consultant Association. He likes the rules. The editor-in-chief of Drone 360, that publication Tim Kidwell. He says that the task is now to, quote, capture the data and analyze it to get actionable data. Without actionable data, all the other stuff is superfluous.
But with every good news, there's some bad news. The National Agricultural Aviation Association, the NAAA, thinks the FAA set the bar a little low concerning safety and certification requirements. Now, the NAA, the NAAA, we'll call it going forward, are the people who fly crop dusters. Mm. And we all know that crop dusting is a special form of aviation and usually done fairly low to the ground in the same environment, 400 feet, that you would UAVs. So their concern is that crop sprayers are going to be flying in the same airspace, and they want stricter certification requirements for drone and drone operators, and also more requirements for drone maintenance. That makes sense. This is their bread and butter, and they're flying in. Crop spraying is a very, very difficult thing to do. Pilots are really, really good, and now you're throwing in something into the mix that's going to complicate things even more than flying 10 to 15 feet off of the ground, spraying stuff, dodging trees and buildings and power lines, etc. So I sort of kind of don't disagree with them.
Yes, David, I think I feel the same way. Certainly when we look at drones and commercial aviation or general aviation interacting, that's one set of issues. But when you look at drones flying in the same airspace as crop sprayers, that's a little different thing. So I can understand where they're coming from. I think this is also an example of some good dialogue that needs to be had. And I think this is the sort of thing that the FAA would say that, yeah, that's true. This is an example of a kind of a follow-on step that needs some attention. So I think that the dialogue is important, is good. There are probably other industries, probably other other interest groups that may have issues with drone flying that are kind of unique to what they do. And, you know, we hope that those all come out as well. And there's some good conversation, good healthy discussion.
And they're taking the right tact. It's a positive. We need to talk this through. It's not, oh dear, you're going to ruin, you know, it's a very positive.
Yeah.
I like the tenor and the tone of this is a negotiation and an understanding, and not the what we used to have, which is, oh my God, the drone's going to fly through my windshield. We can't have them at all. Right. They acknowledge that it's going to be a very useful tool, but we need to tighten up the rules specific. And they're really saying it specifically for this industry. So good for them. Let's talk some more farming. How about when cows fly? You know, when pigs fly, no, but evidently AT&T has cows that they like to fly. What's a cow, Max?
I didn't know this, but it makes a lot of sense. So we have cows called cells on wheels. And what these are basically mobile cell stations.
Towers.
That can be deployed to events, sporting events.
Like Democratic National Conventions.
Convention
you
events.
See, you should see how many of these things are littered around my where I live.
Right. It's where you need to bring that kind of mobile connectivity.
Oshkosh.
Or something like that. There's another great example. Another kind of example is disaster scenes where it may be in a remote area where there is no existing cell phone coverage, or it's not very good, or even a natural disaster, say, where that's been taken out and there is none. So they can bring them in temporarily. So that's something that AT&T already does. But now they're looking at a different kind of cow, in this case, cell on wings. Interesting idea.
Yeah, and I don't quite under. Well, we've talked about perpetual satellites with Facebook and Google using that for internet. AT&T is following along. They've already said they're using drones to inspect their cell towers, and they're trying to figure out how an in-flight drone could act as a mobile cell tower. Now, I mean, it could be a tethered. It could be a self-flying perpetual satellite, I think. But they're looking for something to make it better. I mean, and we're all data hogs. I mean, it is kind of amazing how much we actually use our data now more than we actually talk to people.
One thing that wasn't clear to me is what size drones we might be talking about here. When I look at a cell tower, there is a lot of equipment. It's huge. I haven't seen these cells on wheels, those kinds of cows, but I imagine they're pretty good sized as well.
They look a lot like, have you seen a very sophisticated news truck for a television station?
Yes, yes.
I mean, that's what we're talking about. You know, they've got a long antenna that they can, a satellite antenna. And remember, I don't know if most people know this, but cellular communication is line of sight.
Right.
The towers have to see each other in order for the signal to go. So when you bounce around or bounce up to a satellite, right? So you don't necessarily need a really big structure, but a drone acting as a center point between two towers is just a relay to, so you might not need so much stuff if it's not doing the upload to the from the ground up to the antenna. But if you're using it as a relay from antenna to antenna, that actually might not require as much technology. Did the historian actually sound coherent on that?
a bit. I don't know if we're talking about components that can be sufficiently miniaturized, so we're talking about some kind of multi-copter here, or if this is something that's going to be or could be much heavier, require fixed wing. And then there's also the question of, you know, flight time. If you're carrying around a lot of gear, a lot of heavy gear, how much does that weigh, and how long can that stay aloft? Lots of interesting questions. I get the sense from this article that they're not particularly far along in terms of deploying anything like this. It's just something that's being studied. I think AT&T, as you mentioned, David, is already doing cell tower inspections with drones, and I think they're just interested in looking at other ways that they can employ drones in the business that they're in.
We're talking about a disruptive technology. Anything's possible, so you might as well go. You might as well see if it works. So,
speaking of disruptive and seeing if it works, this next item is fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this, but first of all, let's thank our Slack team for providing it. We know that swarming is a technology currently being used by drones. I mean, and if you haven't heard us talk about it before, a lot of times it's been these sort of dances and artsy kind of things, but a bunch of drones operating together. Well, Arizona State is now trying to operate drones via a skull cap and electrodes and operate a swarm. Now, we've seen this being done with a single drone being operated by a human using just thoughts, but this is now using multiple drones. I don't know, Max. I can't think that hard. How about you?
It's interesting to learn more about how they actually do this. As you mentioned, the electrodes pick up your brain activity, and you exert a certain amount of thought, and software processes that and affects the drones. This will actually control up to four. They don't all have to be aerial, but four robotic craft. It could be land craft or drones. But it was interesting that they have to kind of recalibrate the operator each day once they learn the brainwave patterns that are associated with different types of commands for these drones, and then allow you then to control them in that way. Tomorrow, when you come back to the lab, apparently, you know, your brainwaves, you're just not identical to the way you were before, so they have to relearn that. But you know, it's a first step in a process. Kind of exciting. I think just the ability to, with your thoughts, control one drone is impressive enough. But you know, if we're now to the point where we have the possibility of actually controlling a collection of them, a swarm, if you will, that's really, really impressive, I think.
Well, I guess we'll see. Skynet's coming. It's just, I don't know. So you have to recalibrate your brain waves. But that's okay, because, you know, that can be done with some brain freeze. And you can get that via Flirty, because now Flirty delivered 7-Eleven and Slurpees to a customer via drone.
That's right. Flirty just keeps coming back time after time with package deliveries that kind of are moving this forward. For those who may not be familiar with what a 7-Eleven is, and I imagine that's just a U.S. retailer? It's a convenience store.
They sell hot dogs, hamburgers, sodas, gasoline, you know. It's your run-of-the-mill convenience store. And I think 7-Eleven actually is overseas. I think they have 7-Elevens in Great Britain.
Well, what they did is they made two fully autonomous deliveries. They say FAA-approved deliveries to two residential homes in Reno, Nevada. Now, the Flirty drone delivered a chicken sandwich, some donuts, hot coffee, and, of course, these Slurpees that you mentioned, David, which is kind of an ice.
It's a flavored ice drink, sort of like you'd get a colada or a coffee from Starbucks, except it's right. Cherry or Coke.
And what happened is the Flirty drone made its way to the residence, to the homes, hovered over the backyard and lowered the package to the hungry and thirsty homeowners. And Flirty didn't do this alone. Well, they partnered with 7-Eleven, of course, but they've also teamed up with the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems for this delivery.
So, and Chris Wallace, director of operations for NIAS, said, quote, "This delivery required special flight planning, risk analysis, detailed flight procedures, ensuring residential safety, privacy, and were equally integrated." Okay, you know, we flight planning, we got risk analysis. Were we going to spill the coffee? Right, detailed flight procedures. You know, does the slushing around of the Slurpee interfere with the flight of the quadcopter?
David, you're being silly.
I'm making a little light of this, but
it really is quite an accomplishment.
It is quite an accomplishment, and it's a step, and it's another step, you know. One thing that they didn't say was it flown beyond line of sight?
That's a key question, isn't it?
Because, you know, kind of pointless driving your truck down, flying your delivery quadcopter, but I'm sure it was, but I'm sure it was a closed course, you know, like we have all of our car commercials. So I'm sure that the testing did, well, it was beyond line of sight, but it's a step. It's a small one, but Flirty seems to be delivering stuff left and right. We know that they delivered the medical supplies, which is probably more important than delivering Slurpees. But delivering Slurpees is a commercial application, and that's what Amazon and Facebook and UPS, they all want to do. So it's a step in the right direction. Now, if we could only get somebody from Flirty on, we'd be really good. So if anybody from Flirty listens to us, we'd love to have you on as guest.
I'm pretty sure they do listen.
So, as usual, we've talked about the FAA, because every week we talk about the FAA. And, of course, we have a You're Grounded segment. In this case, a drone pilot was arrested at JFK. This is from New York Post. 52-year-old man was arrested for flying a drone 50 feet to the right of a jet and 20 feet below it.
Yeah, this drone was spotted by the pilot on approach about 4 miles from the airport. When I see these things, David, and I read it, a 52-year-old gentleman did this. You know, if it was a 17-year-old teenager, I might have one reaction. But a 52-year-old man, you really hoped people would know better. Apparently, the New York Post feels kind of the same way, because in the article, they refer to this man as a, quote, dim-witted drone operator.
Can't fix stupid. I don't know. I'd love to know what his logic was. You know, it just, I wish somebody would just walk up to him and go, okay, what were you thinking? But we won't know. Oh, and the drone was confiscated. So we'll have to follow this up to see if he gets prosecuted. It's interesting now, Max. We are now moving to the area where people are getting arrested for flying near fires and airports. Now we got to see how far along the thing goes. That do they get jail time? Do they get fines? Does the judge not care and just sends them with a slap on the wrist? We got to keep following this on. It's interesting now that for a while there, nobody was getting arrested. Now, over the last month or so, I mean, and once there's regulations now, there's reasons to arrest people. So we'll keep following up to see how your grounded files continue.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it's more than a slap on the wrist. But another part of this, I think, is how it's communicated. I think there should be a penalty. All right, so maybe in the first couple of cases, maybe you're not as heavy-handed with sentencing as we might be eventually, but there needs to be really good communication, I think, so that the general population out there understands that this kind of flying is gigantically unsafe, and that if you're caught doing it, you're going to pay a penalty. So from that, we've got an example of a great use for drones.
Yeah, this is one of those for the hashtag drones for good. This was from Yahoo.com. Using drones to hunt landmines. Landmines are a big deal. There's thousands, if not millions, of them lying around in a lot of third world countries where, unfortunately, kids play in soccer fields and find them. And you even find them left over from World War II and World War I in Europe. So two Afghani refugees who are now living in the Netherlands created a small UAS hexacopter with either a claw or the ability to drop an explosive device onto a mine to detonate it. That's the final product. The start actually was they're going to use ground penetrating radar or 3D scanning or a metal detector to use the drones to locate the mines. Kind of like our precision agriculture. You program it to fly a bunch of patterns over the field. In this case, it's a minefield instead of a vineyard, but it records all of the mines, and then you can send out another drone to remotely detonate them. What they're saying is they'd land a small device on top of the mine that they could and then fly the hexacopter away or a quadcopter and then detonate the device remotely, saving the people, and really, really good use. And they're doing this on their own funds. They want to test it in Afghanistan, and they've got a Kickstarter campaign. And I don't normally say, you know, we don't normally recommend Kickstarter programs, because you never know. But in this case, I might throw some bucks that way, because it's just a really, really good use for UAVs.
Yeah, this is a good cause. And yeah, so many people each year are killed or maimed, lose limbs because of old landmines that are still out there. So this is a great one.
So that wraps up our stories. But as we record this, our favorite air show in North America, the number one, according to listeners on USA Today, based on yours truly's recommendations, is Oshkosh. And Oshkosh is open to all sorts of airplanes. For once, for the first time in a long time, they had completely filled the airport. They didn't have any parking spaces for airplanes left, which was really big news. But they had a really big visitor this year, the Martin Mars. Now, if you're not familiar with the Martin Mars, it was a aircraft built at the end of World War II to transport cargo across the Pacific. It's a very, very large flying boat, and Oshkosh is located off of Lake Winnebago. So the Martin Mars, there's two left, the Philippine Mars and the Martin Mars. And this video was done by the Experimental Aircraft Association, and it's a beautiful airplane, filmed beautifully, and I'm proud of EAA to actually include drone photography into their universe, because they've become one of the advocates on the aircraft side for UAVs and how to safely integrate them into the airspace. And this is just a really good minute and a half of looking at a beautiful airplane sitting on a beautiful lake, and really well done drone footage.
Yeah, what an aircraft. Four-engine, propeller-driven aircraft. It's just spectacular. I just can't say enough about it.
And it will lead you to other videos. They were doing live. They actually did a live fire drop on the flight line, you know, they filled up the aircraft and dropped the water onto the flight line. And for the people who were out there in 90-degree heat, I'm sure the breeze felt really good. Having had that experience with a firefighting C-130 and having them dump the full range of water onto the flight line does cool you off just a little bit.
Yeah, I imagine. Boy, I could have used some of that today myself. Oshkosh is, of course, as you mentioned, David, it's a wonderful event. I understand they're doing or did by this time, the drone zone again, something like that.
Yes, which is, they started that last year. They had the drone cage where pilots could see and fly and interact with UAVs. You know, if you've never flown one or have never touched one and you're a pilot, you probably are pretty scared of them, you know, and it's a good communication tool. It's like we were talking about the precision agriculture, you know. EAA has accepted and trying to bring in those UAV pilots because, like we talked about last week or the week before in the episode, UAVs could be a gateway drug to becoming pilots, you know, from flying UAVs to flying general aviation, and we need more general aviation pilots. And now with Part 107, some of the skills you get as a UAV pilot will transfer over to becoming a real pilot, or I don't want to say real pilot, but a licensed pilot. So good to EAA and really pretty footage. I like it. But I like Martin Mars's. So, and if you got $3 million you want to loan Max and I, we'll be happy to buy it on your behalf.
Oh, so in a heartbeat. So we need a big benefactor. But I know that some of our listeners, David, are at Oshkosh, attended Oshkosh this year. And if you're listening and you did take a look at what was done with unmanned aircraft at that event this year, you know, drop us a line, give us a description, or even maybe record a short description, your impressions of that part of Oshkosh. And we'd be delighted to play that.
And you're right. That's something we've never really said before on this show, but we always say it on Airplane Geeks. This is an audio podcast. If you want to leave us an audio message, we'll be happy to play it because, I mean, it's not hard to roll it into the show. So yeah, definitely. And it could be something simple as recording into your iPhone or your phone and doing a little MP3. And we'll be happy to play it. We'd love to have that kind of interaction with our listeners. So
Absolutely.
Speaking of interactions with our listeners, maybe we should tell everybody where we can find everybody and wrap this show up.
All right. Well, of course, this has been episode 156 of the UAV Digest. So you can find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes are at theuavdigest.com/156.
And of course, how else can you find us? You can find us on Twitter at the UAV Digest. We want you to become part of our Slack team. We want you to interact with our other UAV listeners and our Airplane Geek listeners, because you guys will be able to convince them how wonderful we are. And that can be done at theuavdigest.com/team, or just send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest, and we'll be happy to send you a link. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. Like I said, I mentioned the email address, feedback@theuavdigest.com. We haven't had any guests on in a while, and that's mostly my fault. But if you guys have any suggestions on who you might like to see us interview and have on the show, send me a suggestion at david@theuavdigest.com, and let's see if we can make that happen. Even better, if you provide some contact information, it will make my life just a little bit easier, but you don't have to. And, of course, you can leave some feedback to our iTunes so people can find us, Stitcher, or Google Play. And if you listen to us on Google Play, let us know so we know how it sounds on Google Play. For swag, you can go to our Cafe Press store. And, of course, if you'd like to help the show monetarily, and all of the money stays to use for the show, for servers, etc., that's our Patreon account, which is patreon.com/theuavdigest. And, of course, all of those links are on the show notes. So I guess with that, this is David at the Democrat National Convention.
And Max, pleasantly not at the Democratic National Convention in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.